Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Cariad Lloyd. Griefcast is a place to talk, share and laugh about the peculiar human process of death and grief. Each week, I talk to a different person about their experiences of grief and death as we remember someone that they have lost along the way, whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club. Welcome to Griefcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Hey griefsters, I hope you're having an okay week / festive times, Christmas, holiday, break. I hope it's nearly over because I don't know about you, it seemed incredibly long this year, and that was without a lockdown. But yeah, I'm sending you much love if it was tough or difficult, or you're just relieved it's over, or if January is your month and you feel like, oh, I haven't even finished it yet because now I've got to go through this. Sending you much, much love. Thank you for all your lovely words about season 10. This is the continuation of season 10. We don't normally release episodes in January, but I am releasing some now because I've mentioned it before. My book is out January the 19th. You are not alone. If you haven't pre-ordered it yet and you're listening to this, what's wrong with you? You know you're going to buy it. Come on, just pre-order it. It makes a huge difference to the first week of sales, which really helps the book get out to all the other shops and to other various media points. So really, really, if you have ever enjoyed this series or ever found it helpful, I would be so grateful if you could pre-order it. And a tiny bit of any other business, my book launch has moved. It has moved to January the 19th at Waterstones Piccadilly, a far more easier venue to access. So if you would like to come and see me and the incredible legend that is Fee Glover chatting about grief and death and everything in between, please head to Waterstones and get your ticket. Thank you. This week, I'm so excited to be talking to the fabulous band, The Staves. They are, oh, they're so good. They're just one of my favourite griefy music band. And I mean that in a nice way. I just feel like they hit that absolute midpoint of bittersweet and romantic and also sad and melancholy, which is my favourite type of music and reminds me of the Glue Ensemble, who are the band who do the music for this show. The Staves are made up of three sisters, Emily, Jessica and Camilla. They're originally from Watford. Shout out to my North London friends. And they've released four albums, sold out the Barbican several times, toured with First Aid Kit. They're amazing. Their latest album, Good Woman, is a really beautiful, beautiful album. And it was written after the death of their mum, partly. So there's a lot of tracks on there that I think griefsters would really appreciate. So yeah, they did come in to talk to me about their mum, Jean, who died in the summer of 2018. So I'm so excited to be joined today by the incredible band, The Staves. I will let them introduce themselves so you can hear, because there are three of them.
Hi, I'm Camilla.
And I'm Emily.
And I'm Jess.
Amazing. Camilla, Emily and Jess. And who are we remembering today?
Our mum. We're remembering our mum today. Yeah.
And what was her name?
Her name was Jean.
Jean. So how long ago did she die?
It was 4 years and a few months, wasn't it? Wow. We had the fourth anniversary in June.
Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? It sounds like a long time if you haven't been through it yourself. Like, I remember having friends who said, yeah, like, you know, so-and-so died 4 years ago, and me thinking, oh, that was ages ago. But actually, when you when it happens to you, it doesn't feel like very long at all.
Yeah, time bends in such a strange way when that stuff happens, because it, yeah, on one hand, it feels like 1,000 years. Then on the other hand, it feels like it was just yesterday and it's still really fresh. And I don't know, I'm supposed to be further along down the road of like recovering from grief or shock or whatever. And I don't know. Yeah, it bends in a strange way.
Yeah. And you're not, you know, everybody says that on the show. And I say years 1 to 5, I have appointed myself to define years 1 to 5 as still like fresh. Like, I think that's fresh. And I completely relate to what you're saying, Emily, of if you haven't been through it, you're like, oh yeah, 4 years. If someone says, oh, I haven't seen that person for 4 years, it goes, you know, like, that was ages ago. But grief doesn't work like that. And she was your mum for a very long time. So yeah. Obviously 4 years without her is actually not that much time in the relationship you had with her. So I think it's perfectly okay to still find that raw. And so I'm 20 plus years with my dad and I'm still talking about it. And sometimes that can seem quite depressing, because I think sometimes my guests think, oh my god, am I gonna, in 20 years still we talking about it? But not everyone does a podcast about it, so you might be right. But I think it's like what you said, Emily and Camilla, it's really your expectations of your grief are often very different to what the reality is. So your expectations is like, oh, 4 years, I'll be sad, but wistfully thinking, oh, well, that's one of these. And actually, that's not how grief works. It comes, it goes, it smacks you over the head, it leaves again. Like, how do you feel, Jess? Are you feeling like it's a long time ago, or does it feel like still very raw and present?
I think it's still a little bit up and down. There's moments where, yeah, it feels like 4 years and that's really strange. And then moments when I don't understand what a year is anymore or what time is. And yeah, it's very, very strange. So our mum, Jean, she was 66 and she died of a hemipericardium, which is like a type of heart attack. It's also known as aortic dissection.
What a lovely image.
Really horrible name. Lovely. But it's something a bit like an aneurysm or something like that. So it's a very, very sudden kind of out of nowhere thing that happened with no kind of diagnosis of a heart condition or anything in her life. So she was just our mum, and then just suddenly out of nowhere, she died. And she'd spoken about, I remember her saying the phrase kind of, you know, if you drop down dead tomorrow kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was the most surreal thing to go through, having no warning that anything was wrong. And I think that's maybe part of why I still feel I'm kind of swimming in this surreal sort of pool of accepting it almost. It felt so cruel. I mean, it's cruel for anyone in any circumstance, but it's like you're playing catch up with reality for quite a long time when it's something completely out of nowhere.
Yeah, I think the first year was really just getting over the shock of it.
Yeah
before just trying to
believe that it had actually happened. Yeah, it's a crazy thing to have that bolt from the blue. I remember playing like sort of death top trumps a lot in my head of like, well, at least she didn't suffer, you know, so she scores highly on that part. It's like, but I didn't get to say goodbye and there wasn't any warning. So, okay, but then at least this and that, but then that, and just, you know, like, is it better to have it this way or that way? And it kind of sucks whichever way you slice it.
Yeah, there's no answer.
Really. A different experience, but it's certainly a thing.
And I've spoken to so many people, and they are sort of two camps, really. Obviously, there's smaller, tiny, unusual situations, but mostly there are the people who die from terminal illnesses and they watch them in pain. And then there's the extremely sudden heart attack, hit by a bus, like, phone call. And as you said, like, neither wins. But I think I totally did that top trumps. We call it grief maths as well, where you're like, well, they had their mum or they had their dad for that long, but they didn't like them. So does that mean they're sadder?
Yeah.
But I did say that to them. I knew they loved me, but also, like, you're always trying to make a logic of something that's illogical.
Yeah.
And I think it's such a common part of grief of, like, because especially when there's shock involved, you're trying to be like, well, what is this? What is these mad feelings? Like, if I can ground them in, like, oh, well, we didn't have that, we didn't have this, you can sort of like, oh, I should feel this way then. Like, it sort of gives you a post to hang on to, whereas grief is just such a tornado of feelings. There is, you feel like there's nothing to hold on to.
Yeah.
And I think the shock is such a big part of it. So with my dad, he had cancer, but he was diagnosed in February and dead by the April. So it was very, very quick. Obviously, not as quick as a heart attack. But I was in shock for years. Because how can sounds so stupid, how can someone be there and then not be there? Like, that doesn't make sense. So I think I totally understand what you were saying. And just the shock is just such a part of grief when it has been so sudden.
Yeah.
How did you find out? Did you literally get a phone call? Did one of you have to tell the others? Like,
We got a phone call. And actually at the time, Camilla, as we're formally calling you.
My stage name, Camilla.
May I call you Mills?
The artist formerly known as Camilla.
Mills was living in, she was living in the US at the time. You and I were both in London. And so, so Emily and me found out and went straight to her.
Yeah.
But you couldn't get there till, you know, the next day. And actually, I think that was another sort of surreal. We were discussing how I think you can go through the same experience, but it's different for everybody. And
you had
a different experience even within that experience, because you went there on the day, like the terrible day. And you weren't actually there.
Yeah, and I think being physically so far away, it kind of felt all the more baffling because Emily called me and told me. I remember kind of waking up and seeing that there'd been some missed calls, and I just felt a bit weird. And you said, like, are you around? And, like, are you alone? Like, could you take yourself off or something? And I was just like, okay, something weird has happened. And you told me, and I just kind of, I didn't even, like, cry straight away. I was just like, you know, the utter shock of it. And it felt even more surreal just because I'm however many thousands of miles away, and I felt so far away from all of you. I of course just wanted to, like, be there and hug
Apparate.
You guys, and the thought of, like, getting on a plane at that point, I was like, I can't even walk. Like, I don't know how to. And I know it sounds so stupid, but I remember, like, I was kind of in a daze, and I was at my boyfriend's house, and there were a few other people who were there as well. I remember being kind of, like, guided downstairs and, like, handed some water, and I was all shaky. And I remember going to the loo and starting to count the things that were, like, the first things that I'd ever done without a mum. This is my first wee that I've ever done without a mum. This is the first time I'm washing my hands. It's the first time I'm looking in a mirror. This is, and just kind of like,
oh my God.
It felt so, it felt so surreal to think that this is the first time I'm ever doing anything in the world without a mum. Because it's always been this part of your life that you just assume is there and that's just a pillar. And it's absolutely mad. And that shock of flying home and also kind of a bit of a, not, I guess maybe guilt of, again, going through the same thing, but not having the same experience. Because you guys were there and they were in the instant aftermath of it, of like people coming over in that 24 hours and, you know, being there with everyone, and I wasn't, and I just kind of felt so bad that we weren't having, for something so important, that we weren't having exactly the same experience, because us being able to support each other through it has been so integral, because we're the only ones that really know how it feels in this particular situation, you know, to lose that particular person in that role.
And I'm so fucking grateful that we all had different, you know, we all had individual relationships with our mum, obviously, but we were all really close. And I thank the stars that there is that, because I was talking to someone the other day who had a really complicated relationship with her mother, and her siblings had different relationships, and then when her mother died, it was really, really complicated. And I would describe my grief as like very pure, and sort of all of our griefs as just like pure sadness and loss and just sort of devastation and shock.
But at least it's simple in that respect, I suppose.
It was simple that we all just bloody loved her.
And there's no like
I'm so grateful for that.
Very lucky,
We're well lucky.
But this is it, isn't it? What you're describing, Mills, if I may call you Mills.
You may.
Camilla. I was joking. is that completely understanding that shock and how your brain tries to process things, like, you know, when you're counting the first time, because your brain is just very gently sort of holding you by the hand as you're like, and being like, this is the first time, this is just very, I think that's so interesting, because your brain chose really small things. Because if you'd focused on the big, I'm in America, I'm not there, your head would have fallen off your body. Like, it's too much. But to go, oh, this is the first time I'm doing this, I'm looking in the mirror, it's like your brain just draws you on these tiny, tiny little things so you can accept that and that and that and then get towards the bigger picture.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, I mean, yeah, shock is such a big part of it. I think also what you're all describing is so interesting, especially within a family, obviously talking to three sisters. The thing about grief is its togetherness and its isolation. Like it is, like we said, it's a really complicated beast. And you can, you know, like you said, you all understand Jean, the mum, because you all had that experience, but you all had different experiences because you're not the same person. And I think that can be really hard for some people to be like, well, why isn't my sibling crying like I am, or why aren't they doing this? Because but you do have a completely different relationship to this person despite them having raised you. And I've got two kids now, and it's taken me to have two kids to understand, like, I am such a different mum to the second one than I was to the first one. I'm sorry, babes, I really didn't know what I was doing. And I can see, like, how I react to things that the second one does. It's just a little bit calmer, a little bit, oh yeah, yeah, you're doing that, I've been here before. And you go like, oh, I see, that's where it begins, you know. That's where children being like, oh, mum's not stressy, mum's relaxed, and the other one being like, what?
Yeah.
mum is always stressed. And so, and that's when it comes with grief. It's so, you know, I think it's amazing that you said that you have the support, but equally you can be isolated with your feelings as well, because, you know, you're in America, or you're different, you're not, like, all of that stuff. And I wonder, isn't it funny, I was thinking, Camilla, when you said, like, you weren't there, it's funny, like, if you've grown up in the same house as people, like, that's your childhood base, it's like, if something big happens, it's almost like, why isn't it exactly like it was? Like, suddenly you realise, oh, we don't all live on the same floor or next to each other in bedrooms, like, things have changed, but somewhere in your brain you're like, no, I'm still, that person's still there. So for you to be in America must have been like, oh, hang on, what, I'm a grown-up, like, and, why am and, I not here?
Yeah, and we've had a very sort of extended, or like slow release from childhood in that sense, because we've chosen to work together, and that the work we do involves so much travel, and we literally are, like, often sharing beds and sharing rooms and sharing like just so many things that was just exactly the same as childhood. And so, so that sense is still really strong. And so, the feeling of like, well, I should have been there, or whatever, and, or being left out, or being, and also, is really strong still.
Also the family home, the home that we grew up in, mum was still living in that house. And so we still had bedrooms with all our stuff in it for when we'd come and stay. And we had all lived there and moved away at some point, and inevitably at some point you get dumped and you move back home with your mum or whatever. And there was always that home base, not as in the shop home base, but literally
there's always home base in Watford, like
always.
She did frequent home base quite a lot, and TK
it's what
Maxx.
She would have wanted.
The
Max doesn't have the Max.
She always took it to the Max.
But even TK Maxx, there's places like Marks and Spencer, TK Maxx. I could not go there.
I couldn't go into Marks and Spencer's for probably the first 2 years.
And it feels like such a silly thing, doesn't it? Because it's so trivial. It's just going to a fucking shop.
But you see a woman of a similar age, like looking through some
looking
nice
at the sale,
and you just think, oh my god, that's her. That would be what she was doing. And
oh, it'd kill me.
Yeah,
I cried recently walking past some in Marks and Spencer, and it just like. Kind of like what you were saying before of how it can sometimes just come out of nowhere like a freight train and you're not expecting it at all. But I walk past these like little cheese and onion crisp bakes that were there.
They're the ones that you bought for me.
And they're like the most lovely, like comforting thing. And mum, if we came back from tour or something, or if I came back to visit from the States, she'd be like, oh, I got you some crisp bakes because you love them, don't you? They'd always be in the freezer. And I saw them and was just like, oh. And just suddenly was hit by this like wall of fresh hell. But it's kind of, it's one of those things, maybe when it has been a certain amount of time, as hard as it is, having those random waves or seemingly random waves of grief, is sometimes they kind of feel quite welcome and feel almost like comforting in a very strange way, because it's reminding you of that person and you feel almost a little bit closer to that person, and it's giving you a chance to kind of dip into that well of love and feeling you have towards that person.
Yeah.
That you can't sustain all the time. You can't constantly check in with it, or I find it hard to constantly check in with it.
Yeah.
It has its own rhythm of when it, you know, when the waves come, and that can, be different between the three of us.
It's like...
Or different at different times of the year.
It's like a hum in the background that's always there, I think. Yeah. And have you ever had it with, like, something like a TV and you turn it off at the wall and you realise, oh, now the room is silent, but before there was this like small hum that I didn't even notice that was just there all the time. And I think that's what it's like, and then sometimes you just really pay attention to it and it becomes a very loud noise rather than this just like constant kind of fuzz in the background.
That's so true. I remember like missing, I think after the first year or maybe the second, or maybe it was the third anniversary, I can't remember. I remember kind of almost missing the first year.
Yeah.
And wanting to be back in that, even though it was the worst, like the most pain I've ever been in, apart from childbirth maybe. But it's simple, and it's enormous, and it should be enormous because something enormous happened. And I sort of felt...
Well, like safe in that or something.
Well, it just was representative, and I felt a little bit like I shouldn't be able to think about her and just be fine now. Mm. I want to still be like weeping and wailing because the thing that has happened is still enormous and has changed my life forever. And I sort of... The more it hurt, the more at least I felt close to it because it had only just happened, and so it was so raw and so fresh because she only spoke to her a week ago. And and then suddenly when you're counting years and you're not there anymore, you kind of... It's weird. It's like you don't want to be in pain, but you kind of... There is a comfort in that as well.
Yeah, again, it's so common, and we just don't talk about it, but that first year is awful, terrible. It's not like you're like, where should I go today? That first year. But it's really clear I'm in pain. Everyone knows I'm in pain. And I'm in pain because this person I love just died right now. They just died. And so you know what to do. It's like, well, I'm not going to reply to your silly message or go out to a party. I'm going to grieve. Like, yeah. Everything. I know what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
It's fine. We're talking the day after the Queen's funeral. And obviously, I was thinking, like, watching yesterday, it's like, everything's so clear. It's what you're meant to do. Like, we're all walking, we're all sad. Mm. Everyone's marching. Guns, yes, clear. And what we're so bad at, I think, is, like, what you're describing, Emily, is the 3 years down the line. How do I still keep that feeling of sadness without... But I'm at a party and I'm working and I'm looking after kids and people would look at me and go, she's fine. And all day they would, you would have said, oh, I didn't break, like I could walk, my knees worked. I laughed. And I think it's really, it's so interesting what grief does and how it moves. It's such a mercurial thing that at the beginning, it's just like, it's like you said, a really loud noise. You can't switch that telly off. Yeah. And then you get the ability to switch it off. And then also, it also, even though you have the ability to switch it off, it sometimes whacks you around the head when you're like, hang on, I just turned you off. That's not. So it's such an uncontrollable thing. It doesn't stop being uncontrollable.
Yeah.
The waves just get further apart. So that's the thing is, like, year one, like hourly, you can be hit around the face with agony. But minute by minute, it's like, oh God, and that and that. And then 3 years down the line, it might be like every 3 months. And then, you know, I'm 20 plus years and I can go for years without something really kicking me. And then suddenly it'll be like, oh God, like, wow, I haven't felt like that for 4 years, but that, oh, damn it, that's a thing he would have really loved. So it's, the gaps get bigger, but and I think you get better at managing it, but it doesn't magically disappear. But I know what you mean, Emily, with that first year. It's just, I think also that's why sometimes people find it hard to not let go, because you don't let go of it, but they find it hard to move away from that first year because it feels like you're closer to them.
Yeah.
And there's a guilt, isn't there, of like, oh, I stopped crying every day. Do I not care? Obviously, it's not the case. Yeah. But somehow in your head, it's like, oh,
yeah.
Am I moving away? I'm moving away from them somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's either kind of a thing of, I do find that guilt does come into it quite a lot, which is a useless thing when it comes to grief. But yeah, it's either, I've definitely felt guilty before when it's like, oh my God, I forgot for a second there in the early days, and you're not crying all the time. And it's like, oh fuck, does that mean that I don't really care, or I'm a bitch or something like that? And then on the other hand, yes, obviously. Thank you for clearing that up. But there's also the kind of guilt of, say, it being 4 years down the line for us, and thinking like, I should be okay, because it's not the obvious like mourning period that has finished. It's real life now. And if you are still like struggling with certain bits or having times when you are beating around the head, you can be a bit cruel to yourself and say like, you should be okay by now, come on, it's been 4 years. And you, like, your inner voice can be really mean and not very caring. And I think sometimes it comes down to that. I think there's a need that people have when there's a hard feeling, whether it's like general mental health stuff or whether it's a trauma like grief, there's always a need to like fix it.
Yeah.
And to have like a final point where then you'll be fine.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to accept that certain things just aren't like that, and they're things that you have to live with and deal with, and it's about accepting them and addressing them on a semi-regular basis, or allowing it to happen. And that doesn't mean you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
It's just, some things don't have an answer.
And people say, you know, you should go and see a grief counsellor or something, and it's like, well, my mum died like 4 months ago. I think it's just normal that I'm really upset. And that,
you should really get that fixed.
Yeah, like, you know, you thought about seeing someone, and it's like, well, she died, you know, from this completely out of the blue thing. So I'm thinking, you know, is that going to happen to me?
Yeah, of
and
course.
I think, and yeah, and I'm just upset and life is not great right now. And so, but people want to help find a way to fix things. And there is just, time is a healer. It doesn't fix it, but it does help. And that's the only thing I would say, because I've listened to this podcast before, and actually only started listening
after Mum died, and it really helped so much.
Yeah, me too.
Hearing people further down the line and thinking, like, I can get through this, I can survive. Yeah. There are people that walk amongst us who've been through what I've been through, and they're okay, and they've gone on to have, like, good lives and just be and live with it. But that's the one thing I would say to anyone going through it, is that, you know, it does, you will be okay, but it will change you, and your grief won't ever go away. But it's not like that first year forever. It's not. Because it couldn't be. Humanity wouldn't go on if everyone was like that, would they?
Can you imagine what Marks and Spencer's would look like? Just lots of weeping women being like, ah!
A sea of crying women.
Because we all love Mark. We all go there. And if any of us go, it's going to be a big trigger memory for lots of people. So yeah. It would just be weeping in the aisles. I mean, maybe we'd buy more stuff. I don't know.
Drying your eyes on some cashmere.
Yeah. It's also...
I'll pay for it.
Yeah. We were saying with the funeral for the Queen and this kind of national mourning, that's how I felt when Mum died. I wanted the world to stop. I wanted all the shops to close. I wanted all the curtains to be drawn. And this, I suppose it's like this Victorian idea of mourning or whatever. But
she would have loved a gun salute, wouldn't she?
She would have loved it. But it was like, I remember in the morning... the day after, you know, D-Day or whatever, these fucking builders across the road started, like, drilling at, like, 7 in the morning. And I was just like, how can you be up?
How can you not know?
How can you not know how disrespectful this is to this household? And obviously it's nothing to do with them. And seeing people kind of walking down the street with a dog and a coffee and, like, how the fuck are you up doing this shit? Yeah. And world has ended.
And you want to wear black and you want to wear... You know when you get those baby on board badges you
That's
can wear?
That's exactly what I
thought. Yeah. You want to have, like, a I'm grieving badge on.
We so used to sell them. Knows. I used to sell them. It said, please be kind, I'm grieving. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I was running the operation myself and it got a bit much. But we had, like... I just couldn't cope because so many people wanted them.
That's
I had
them, so great.
An artist Such called Camille idea. Bazzini designed them for me, and they're so beautiful. And it was like two hands reaching out, and it said, "Please be kind. I'm grieving." So you could wear it, and so that if somebody saw it on the right day, and they were in the club, perhaps they would be like, "Oh, hey, you know, me too, and hope you're okay." So you could signal, like, by the way, be gentle. And that is the big thing that we have lost with the Victorian mourning period. I mean, that obviously had its own problems, but it is that idea of, like, the world being like, I mean, like, if it had been Victorian times, you would have had a huge black wreath outside your door, and maybe those builders would have gone, oh, let's wait till 7:15, like, you know.
Yeah,
we would have been aware of it, and we don't have that. And it's funny what you're saying, because the people who lost people during lockdown had it, so the world had stopped, and most of the ones I've spoken to said they liked it, because they were like, good, there's no one out there, nothing's open, nothing's happening, and I just get to grieve. And I felt really similar when my dad died, of like, how are people it's when you see them in a shop, isn't it, or laughing or doing something really, like getting a bus, talking to their friends, like, how are you doing? Like, your brain can't comprehend it. And but I actually think, having gone through the lockdown, one of the things I appreciated was that life was there very loudly for me. And I think actually it's quite useful, because what it does, builders digging, people with their coffee, is it's a constant reminder you're gonna do that. But you don't want to hear that at the beginning. You're like, no, I'll never laugh again. But actually it's quite good that the world keeps going, you will see them. That's what life looks like. That's what you're going back to. You're not going to stay here. Yeah. But that is very hard, as you said, when you just want the weeping and wailing bit, and you just, your heart is, you know, like on the floor.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance.
UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the music. So obviously you were a band long before, you know, you had to deal with this. Very successful, amazing band. I love your music so much.
Oh, thank you.
That was actually a big, because I think when we first started emailing was during lockdown.
Yeah.
And I started listening to it and I was like, this is just, yes, this is what I need. Like really heartfelt, emotional music. But I know that, is it the last album was very much sort of influenced by, is that right?
Well, the last album, we put an album out in lockdown called Good Woman. And the album was started before Mum died. And actually we got quite far down that road. And then she died and we kind of down tools. We tried to sort of carry on for a bit and we just realised that we needed time.
Yeah.
And I guess we were, yeah, fortunate enough that we could sort of give ourselves a bit of a break.
One of the drawbacks of being in a, of all going through the same thing together and working together is that it's almost fucking impossible to work. Because if one of you is having a good day and like, right, okay, I think I can do some work today, guaranteed one of the other two will be having like a cryy day and then it was just like the fucking wheels were falling off.
And if you were in a normal band, as in not a family band, it would only be happening to one member of the band and the rest could kind of carry them through.
So
it became quite clear that we just needed some time, and then we kind of came out of the woodwork, I suppose, at the end of 2019 and finished the album. So we did end up writing a couple of songs, or a few songs after she died.
Yeah.
And that was another, like, you know, first thing.
Yeah.
First time I sung again, I remember the first time I played the guitar, first time I wrote a song. But there were some that I'd written about her, and I just felt like they mean a lot to me, but I don't actually know if they're, like, amazing songs.
Yeah, like the poetry of teenage years, isn't it? It's like,
yeah,
like, I feel this is amazing, but the rest of the world might not be ready for my metaphors.
Yeah, and I'm very much still in this fog of the early days of grief, and everything seems like amazing, like art and beautiful, and like the world and like molecules colliding, man, and all this shit. And maybe they weren't great. So I think we weirdly ended up with probably one song that was very directly about her, but the rest weren't. And I remember thinking at the time, like, have we sort of done her a disservice by not suddenly making the album about her? But
it was too soon.
Again, it was that catch-up thing of, like, those songs are going to come, and actually this isn't the time and it's not the record. Because it is too soon.
Yeah.
But we put it out. We finished it 2019. And we were going to put it out 2020. And then the coronavirus started spreading around the world. So we didn't put it out then.
Yeah.
And then by the time we put it out, I think it was 2021, we'd gone into another lockdown, even though we'd put ourselves in an enforced lockdown before.
It was like third lockdown, I think, wasn't it? And I was like, it was like time for some heartfelt music. Here we go again.
We'd been in our own grief lockdown that we'd just come out of, and then we were shoved into a global lockdown. So it was a really surreal time. And by that point, by March 2020, it was only like a year and a half after Mum had died, and I remember we didn't live together or anything, and felt so weird all over again. Like this surreal thing where, like, stop all the clocks, you know, kind of idea of the world has stopped, but I'd just sort of been there and done that. And so it was a kind of prolonged...
Mm. That's tough. You were just ready for like, okay, I can go out on a Friday night and I'll have a drink. And
yeah,
I think I'll be okay this time. Like, rather than like, no, there's no way. And then the world went, okay,
coming
go back home.
Hibernation.
Yeah.
I've just done that. Yeah, that's really tough, isn't it? You're like, I'm sort of ready to face the hello.
Yeah.
Why has everyone gone inside? Yeah, that's... And I talked to a lot of people, actually, and I felt this as well. I mean, I've had this lots of times because he died so long ago. But every time there's a big thing that they don't see, it sort of not brings the grief back, but it's just like a sharpening, isn't it? Because...
Yeah, definitely.
You're like... I remember, like, the first big thing was... weird thing to mention, but the Twin Towers, because he died in 1998. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
And I remember being like, wow, that's a thing he has no idea about.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, wow, there's a world... Not only am I moving... Like, the world is moving really fast without them. And the same with, coronavirus.
Yeah.
The pandemic. You're sort of like, oh, wow, they don't know that's happened. And it sort of makes them that mark in the sand that you have of where they live and where you live, like, even more, like, defined, I guess.
Yeah,
like,
oh. Completely understand that, yeah. And we... So I now live in our family home. And, yeah, there's things like, you know, when Mum first died, everything was the same, apart from she wasn't there. All her things are there. All that, you know, if she could have just materialised, everything would have just been the same. She could have just slotted back in. You knew exactly what she'd say about any given situation and things like that. And then, the more that things change, either, you know, I move in and change the way a room is laid out and we clear out some of her stuff to make room for some of my stuff. And that's all fine, but it's like it's changing. And then, big kind of world events, they all change the world and make it harder for you to imagine that she could just slot straight back in, because it's like, we'd have to figure out... We often have conversations. What would she have said about the Queen dying? What would she have said about the pandemic? What would she have thought of?
Because I just want to talk to her about it. Yeah. Just, like, shoot the shit a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, that's... It's kind of... As well as all these things of it just, like, being sad, it's also just annoying.
Oh, God, it's so annoying.
For God's sake, can I just talk to you about it?
It's so fucking annoying. Yeah. My main feeling now is just being really pissed off, actually. It's a constant feeling of something's... not right. I'm ill at ease. I've forgotten my keys, or I've forgotten something, and I can't remember what.
I always feel like I've forgotten to write back to someone on a text.
Every now and then you remember. It's like, oh, it's because that's missing. Because she's missing.
Oh, that's such a lovely way to, capture. Because I know exactly what you think, and the annoyance. I don't even talk about it enough. Like, I mean, I was furious. I was so furious. How dare he bloody die? What? I need him here. Like, just so irritating that
and
someone would.
You were young as well, which must
I was
just
15.
Be
yeah,
such
I was 15, so
experience.
I was like, I was young. But that feeling of just. And my dad was very full of information, and he was one of those people that if you ever needed to know, why does that country. He would just know. If you ask my mum, she's like, oh, I don't bloody know. Now we have Google, thank God. Because that was basically, he was Google. And I remember just the amount of times I was like, I wonder why the moon... Oh, no one to ask. Why does a bank account take... Like, these things that you just think, oh, I just want to...
Yeah.
And you... I guess it's sort of part of growing up is that you have to figure these things out yourself. Yeah. But it's hard because not everyone does. You know, some people live... I mean... Charles has had both his parents in the 90s, like, talking of the royals, like, there's lots of people in the world who keep their parents for a long time, so it isn't quite fair to say it's growing up, because not everybody has to do it, but there is something in you that when, you know, one of the parents or both the parents goes, kind of significantly shifts. I have to do that now, do I have to say it's going to be okay. Damn it.
I got pregnant 6 months after Mum died.
Oh, that's tough.
And
lovely, but it, also tough.
It was really tough.
You got knocked up.
I got knocked up. So speaking of things that change and things that you wish you could ask your parents, it was, so this was still within the first year, and it was a really rough pregnancy anyway, because I was really sick throughout.
Oh, God.
And I was
yeah, just still reeling from Mum, and it was just awful. It was like it was so bad, and everyone's like, oh, you must be so excited, you're having a baby. I was like, I just want to disappear,
throw up and lie down.
Yeah, it was just awful. And I remember going into Boots and like trying to get my head around, like, okay, I guess I'm gonna have to buy some like nappies and I don't know, whatever like a kid needs, and just every other in the sort of mother and baby department, every fucker in there was a heavily pregnant woman holding hands with their mother. And I just cried and had to like leave. And it's very like, becoming a mother is very mother centric. There's so many women with their mum. I couldn't do it without my mum. And I just craved asking her, like, what was it like when you were pregnant with me? What did you do? And then as soon as I had my daughter, Maggie, weirdly, it was hard because I really longed for, and I still long for her, to hear my mum say, like, oh, that was just what you used to do. And, oh, God, oh, I know, mine was terrible after that. And, you know, all of those things. But it also was a bit of a godsend because it did snap me out of, it literally like yanked me out of a pit of grief. And forced me to be present and to be, I don't know.
You have to get up every day. You have to do things when you have a child. But it kind of affected all of us in that way, I think. She was a little light, wasn't she, that came out of such a dark time.
Yeah.
And there's a sense of being present with a baby in particular. When you have those moments when you're holding them and they're maybe asleep in your arms, you can't really do anything else.
Yeah.
And it's quite meditative in those calm times.
Yeah, yeah.
When you can just, you just sort of breathe in and out and you just be, and you think, God, there's not actually many times in life when I'm doing that.
And also you're looking at this thing that is a completely clean slate, and that you can physically see them learning everything for the first time, like their faces moving and like, oh, that's how I look before I sneeze, or like twitching, dreaming about tits or something. And just like, it is quite centering
at you know, at the best of times it's that. But I think
it's all like that. That was my entire experience of...
But the no downsides at all.
Just meditative. It's just wonderful. Lovely.
Yeah.
But do you know what? Just to go off on a... Just to go back to what you were saying before, Carrie, about your dad, just to shout out to our dad, who is still with us, our dad, Rupert. It really reminded me of Dad when you said the person ask.
Yeah.
You always ask and they always know.
Yeah.
What's going on with Russia then?
Why are they so annoyed? Why are they doing that? Because that's not their country, is it? Yeah.
But there was a revolution. What was going on before then? And like, well, and pull a book off the shelf that he knows about this and that. And we lost our grandma, so my dad's mum, Maggie.
Oh yeah.
2 weeks before Mum died.
Oh God.
She was 98.
Wow.
And we adored her. She was brilliant.
She was amazing.
And she was really old, and it wasn't, obviously wasn't a tragedy in the same way. It was something that everyone knew was coming. She'd lived a long, healthy life until the very end. She was in a care home. You're not going to live much longer beyond 98. So it wasn't a kind of tragedy in the same way. But I was really shocked when I found out, and I remember Dad saying, I'm an orphan now. And it was really weird thinking, God, you are, even though you're my dad, you're still just a person who's lost, our granddad had died a long time ago, but he's lost his mum. And it's just that kind of that weird thing of it can happen to you at any age, and obviously it's not the same as being a child losing your parent. But it was that funny thing of like, I saw him as a kid again. And and even, we're all grown ups and we've been raised by our parents. We're to, step out into the world and be okay. We don't need them to hold our hands through everything. You know, literally we can get through life, but you always still feel like a kid and you need your mum and dad. And I remember in lockdown, I burnt my finger on like the oven or something. And you know, you're like, ah, fuck, I'm really shocked. And you're like, wait, am I supposed to run it under the tap? Or wasn't there a thing we were supposed to actually wrap it in cling film? And I'll call mum and ask. I'm like, I can't call mum. Mum's the person I'd call about these stupid things. I'm a woman in my 30s. I don't need to call my mum when I've burnt my finger.
I burnt my finger.
But it's those weird, you feel like a child again sometimes when you need your mum. And not to mention, you know, being pregnant, obviously.
Well, I had a funny thing, a funny thought the other day, which was a sort of a different perspective on grief, where kind of like a more selfish perspective on grief.
Right. This is making a lot of sense.
I basically made it all about me.
Yeah. Cool.
I was thinking that, you know, I miss mum, and then I was like, but there's also, it's like I miss parts of myself that no longer have an outlet. Like there was... There were parts of myself that only came out when I was with her. Something about our relationship shone a light on a particular side of me, the person I was when I was with her. Yeah. And there isn't anyone else that I'm like that with.
Mm.
And there isn't anyone else who will ever get to see, I don't know, that sort of... I can't describe it. Just a little light has sort of gone out inside my being, and there's like a little sort of dark corner that will never have any light shone on it again, because the person that ignited that
is gone,
doesn't exist anymore.
I did an episode with Philippa Perry.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah, you should listen to it, because she describes it much better than I'm going to re-describe it now. But she said that exactly that. Grief is always, you're always in, two people are always in relationship, and that relationship only exists between those two people. So, you know, what you said is a great example, like you can have, but equally can have, you know, some friends you're very serious with and some friends you're like party. Yeah. And like they sort of don't see the other side. And if you lose, you know, the serious friend or a mother, like that element, that connection between the two people is gone forever. And that's what you're grieving, is the relationship you had one-on-one, really.
Yeah.
And that's why even a family can grieve so differently, because everybody has a different connection. And even though you can, like you said, you all have the experience of her as mum, individually it was different. And that, like, I completely understand what you're the way you're describing it, Emily, is so nice, of like there is that light or that way you express it or the things that you take to that person. Oh, this happened, remember? Like, why did that happen, remember? And you can be a very unfiltered version of yourself, mostly with a parent, can't you? Don't have to think, oh, I hope they don't judge me for this, because you don't care. You're like, oh, God, who cares? Anyway, this happened to me, I'm so cross. And they go, okay. And that's a really healthy, that's what it should be. Obviously, not everyone has that, but that's a really healthy parental-child relationship, that you can just take your worst and best self to them in all its messes. Yeah. You're like, look, what do I do? And they go, well, maybe try this. And you go, well, I'm not going to listen to you anyway.
Yeah.
And exactly. That's a lovely, and when they're gone, that's what grief is. You're mourning that. You're mourning, oh, I'll never get to just, that, like you said, that part of me that they ignited is not there. And I think what's hard, not hard, but what the process of grief sometimes is, it's like, it's not that that part is gone forever. It's that it needs to be sort of recategorized and find a new place for it. And it might be dark at the moment, and eventually, like, you might be able to put a candle there, or you might be able to like dust it a little, and it will never ever be the same, but somehow it will express itself in a different way. Or like you said, you see a cheese and onion bake and that reminds you of it, and then it reminds you of somebody who cared about you so much, and you think, oh well, I'm good at caring about people because they cared about me. And it becomes more, becomes more nuanced, but it never stops being sad that it's not what it was. It's just hard. It's just hard.
I think going back to what we were saying as well about the album, and you know, it not being about mum, but what I meant to say actually was that just by the fact that it's the three of us making music together, she is in that just inherently. You know, she was our champion, she really was. I mean, of the three of us as individuals, but of us together as a band, and she was like, she was our biggest fan.
really miss talking about music with her. Like, she loved music. Yeah, she was such a good music fan.
She was always kind of buying CDs and like checking stuff out that she'd been recommended way more than me. And I'd be like, I don't know, I haven't listened to anything in like 10 years. Like, still listening to Neil Young. And
she's like,
well, you need to check out Stormzy and you need to check out this new record by David Byrne. And I'd be like, oh, okay, shit, right, yeah. And she had a finger on the pulse and she really cared about like pop culture and art. And she, mum and dad, have been so supportive of us from forever, really, of just wanting us to be happy and to do what makes us happy. And I think that when music kind of started amongst us and it became clear that, you know, it was a hobby at first and we'd sing together and it was really fun, and then it got to that point of like, we're gonna like actually try and do it. And there's like, there's been some like industry people sniffing around and I think we might get a record deal. And they were just there for that whole journey, like every gig they'd drive to, every like time I'd load all my guitars and amps in the back of the car, and can you give us a lift to the station? Can you give us a lift here and there? Like, they were doing everything. And I remember like doing a gig at the pub and being like, Mum, I've left my capo at home. She'd be like, right, and like run back and grab it. And all these things, like, have you got your jack leads? Have you got your capos, picks, strings, and all this stuff that she'd... And we used to use the house as a dump for like all our gear in this spare room. And you'd have like tour managers at like 2 a.m. driving us back from a festival.
Loading
like,
everything back into the house.
Loading in drum kits and stuff while she's sort of coming down the dressing gown.
Oh, like, bless
you guys
her.
Right? We're like, yeah, cool. It was just like, she was so in the fabric of everything. And I think she was so proud, and she was always sort of checking the socials and seeing like, oh, so-and-so's tweeted this about you. You should really write back to them. And it's like, oh, yeah.
Oh, God, leave us alone.
It's like, Mum, we're on tour. We're in a pub. Leave us be. And it's like that whole, yeah, that sort of, that cheerleader or whatever, that champion. Mm. It's not gone, because it literally is in us.
Go.
And it cannot go. You can't erase that love. But
you can miss it.
But you can fucking miss it. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, God. Yeah. I could talk to you for ages, and I was just thinking, I've got to stop. Thank you so much. Like, she sounds like a proper good mum. Like, you can tell. The fact that the three of you choose to work together. That is a good sign of being brought up in a very kind, loving household. Because, my God, like, if you hadn't been, you would not be to sing together. So yeah, she sounds like a proper good egg.
Oh,
so
thank you so much,
Jess, Emily, and Camilla/Mills. Thank you.
thank you so much for having us.
If you want to know more about The Staves and when they're gigging, you can head to their Instagram at The Staves, or they're on Twitter at The Staves Music. You can find more information about The Griefcast on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. You can also pre-order the book You Are Not Alone from all good bookshops. The show was recorded remotely. It was edited by Kate Holland. Music was provided by The Glue Ensemble. Stop motion animation by Alice Loveday. Remember, you are not alone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.